And then when we went to America, I'd like to say a little bit about that, because I think I said most of on the other tape, but I have on this tape. But the time came, and it was the spring of the year, must have been April, beginning of April, when we got all the papers filled out, and so we went to Warsaw, Poland, and we came halfway into Warsaw, and we had to stay overnight and catch another train the next day that would go into Warsaw. So we all put our bundles between the two or three or four there, quite a few railroad tracks there, but we put them on one of these between the trains, was cemented a little higher than the train's track. So we put all our belongings out there, and we sat there all night, and it was sort of cold, and we got wet, and stuff got wet, and then we had to wait till the next evening, towards the evening, and then the train came that went into Warsaw, and it took us on. And so it was also a boxcar, and the people that could afford to pay, like there was like this Helen that came over, well, her aunt, she could buy the ticket and went on the passenger train, but we couldn't afford it, so we just took the cheapest fare we could get, and that was a boxcar. And there were two benches in the boxcar, and there was a toilet, but we loaded in, and we sat on the benches. We thought we had it made, put our stuff more or less underneath the bench and so on. But pretty soon, as the train was going, there was more and more people coming up, and we were standing already like herring. We couldn't even sit down. And so one time the train stopped for a little bit, and it was, we boarded the train in the evening, and now all night we was going. And the next day, there was still more people coming in. Pretty soon, the ones at the door, they said, we just cannot take on any more, because it was not even standing room. And that night, we couldn't go to the toilet, and all that evening, we couldn't go. And the next, all day, we came to Warsaw, and got dark already. And then we first found out there was a toilet on this boxcar, and we had no power to push through all these people. They were standing just like sardines. And finally we made it. Then we came to this town at this railroad station. And then we went in there and we took and spread it out. I think we spread it out a feather bed or something. No, that was packed in a sack. But we put some belongings on the floor and lie down and sleep. And then in the morning the manager came. He says, you can't do that in this place. If you want to stay in here, you can stay, but you have to sit on the floor. You can take in half of the station for laying on the floor. So we were balled out, and in that station there, we met this German man. He was a Hollander man, but he spoke English and German and French and what have you. And he saw that we were Germans and didn't know anything about but going to America. So he said, I know of a way and that we can get into a place where you can stay for nothing. You don't have to rent a room. And so he had an address there. And so we all packed our belongings together. And then we went by a streetcar. And he showed the conductor the address. So he said, yeah, we could come on. And then they wouldn't let the boys get on with that sack of feather beds. And I don't know why in the world Daddy wanted the feather bed here. He says, bring the feather bed along and all other stuff that was not needed here. And so the boys, they just, as the streetcar started going, they hopped on the back. There was sort of a little platform, and they pulled the sack with feathers up there, and they drove in the back outside of the streetcar. So we came up to this place, and this was all fenced in, and that was government run, and they had a hospital there and a doctor and a kitchen and a bakery, and then they had what they called barracks. And in these barracks you could go in, and each family they get just maybe 6 feet of this platform that they had made all around the barracks inside. There was platform. And then you each get about 6 feet, and then you put your belongings on there, and you sleep on those beds. I mean, on those boards. There were no mattresses or anything. But at least it was free, and we didn't have to, and we couldn't cook there. So they had a kitchen there, and we were supposed to go and buy our food each day from the kitchen. Once in a while we would do it, but most of the time we would eat just dry stuff like bologna sandwich and Polish sausage and bread, and that was our daily food then. And that cost the daddy so much because we had to live off borrowed money, and we couldn't get into this country. So we stayed there, and pretty soon we separated. The women had to go in one barrack and the men in the other, and which was much nicer. And then they made they had a nice bathhouse there, and every other or third day they had was a shower house. And so we all had to get in and take a shower, and some people didn't want to do that. But I usually went every time they had a shower going, I went. And I always went with this Ida Schilling, my friend. She was the age of my sister Mary's. But Mary always went the day we didn't go. So we was kept clean. Everything was kept clean. And then when we came from, like I said, the story on the other tape about this spy, how he got us into the Russian, to the American consulate, got the visa for us. But we went then from there, when we got our visa, we went to this Danzig, Poland, in, it's called different now, where the big shipyard is. In there, we had to be, the people had to be cleaned and re-loused, because there were so many Jews traveling in. I saw one little old lady, a Jewish lady, I could have cried. She went into these places where they cleaned them up, and first thing they would take and give you a bath. It was a real terrific bath. About a half an hour the showers ran, you really had to bathe. And then they took and each girl got one person, and she went to the hair. Each hair separate, when there was a little louse in it, or a little seed of a louse, which we called nuts, and or eggs, and she pulled them out of the hair. And the boys' hairs was all cut off short. So this one Jewish lady, she was the third time she was re-loused, and because we didn't have any lice, we were neat and clean. Just one time they went through our hair, and we went up to the doctor and other places to be inspected and they okayed our papers. But this one Jewish lady, that was the third time that she came up, and boy, that the German doctor, he sure bawled her out, and he called it a lousy Jew. He said, "Why don't you keep your hair clean once you want to louse up the whole America with your egg lice that you take with you?" So she had to be going through again, through the shower, through the hair washing. And she cried. I felt sorry for her. It was hard too. But after that, it went easy sailing. We got onto a little ship that didn't stay too close to the shore. We had to take these canoes and paddle out, and then get on the ship. And that, I think it was 2 days it took to get into London. And so we stayed on this ship, and then when we came to London, we were taken into a big hotel, but it was close by the railroads there. And there they separated the Jews from the Poles and the Germans and whatever it is, because they cooked different for the Jews. And we had one man there, whenever he knew that the Jews would go, he became a Jew, and they got better food. And when it was not for the Jews separated from us, then he would eat with us. So he was a smart guy. And we stayed in London 3 days. And that's where I first saw my Negro. He was married to a white woman And I thought surely that was the devil. I just couldn't believe that a black man, I was 16 years old and see a black man, there was something like that in this world. And all the little children, they were black. And so then we started out, our ship had just gone to America, the one that we had the ticket bought on, and it was a nice passenger ship, but we had to wait a week for it to come back, and the Jews couldn't wait. They just had, they had first class tickets, so they were well taken care of, and we had third class tickets. And so there was a ship going to America, but this was a freight ship, and but they had room for maybe 150 or 200 passengers. So they took us on that, to that ship, and there we had to get again by boat. They took us up about, oh, maybe two blocks up to the big ship, and we boarded that ship, and we stayed in the basement where the machinery was, the engines and so on. And the others, they all had upper places, but the third class was down by the machinery and so on, and they had a bathroom there, so we could wash and take a bath and got some food, good food too. And Mary got so very sick. So when we came, and we traveled 16 days, and one time we had to anchor for overnight, and the water would come over the ship, and so they all made us go down in the bottom, and the water was just flushing over and back and forth, and it was horrible. So then in this the morning the waves calmed down a little and the fog lifted a little, so we could go on to New York Harbor. And the first chocolate candies I ate, the soldiers went, the sailors went to town and they bought some chocolates and they brought it back to us and gave us women and children and some chocolate candies. And there we had to go to this Kesselgrad, I guess what they call, or something. I don't know the word for it. And there we were, had to be sworn in. And so we was taken on a little ship, and they, it was also with the oars to paddle it over. And it was right on the water, all around water. And he stood this big old house, a couple of great big houses there. And the people came, American people, and they had a very nice waiting room on top. Sort of like, how would I say, a balcony. And they would sit up there and watch us newcomers, our dummies. And we didn't know anything, so pretty soon we were called up, our names were called, was alphabetically. And then Albert, he was so very poor in reading, and they almost didn't want to pass him. So it was newspaper, and we never were used to reading newspapers. So we all had to read a little bit, and then we were sworn in as American citizens, and so we came, they took us by train, and we came to Detroit. And in Detroit, we were again in a big waiting room there at the depot, and now how are we going to get on? There's nobody up to America. We had a guide that guided us, the whole ship had a guide to lead us on. But how could we find our way through? So they put us in this big depot waiting room, and there we sat and waited, and some of us had to go to the bathroom so bad, and Albert says, don't you dare move away. When you go, and then pretty soon they come and call us, and you won't be here. So then we, a little Negro boy came, and he waved with his hands, and we went up, and they put us on the train, and we came from Detroit to Niles, Michigan. And there they let us off, and that was, and we had, I don't know what we ate, we had nothing to eat since we left the ship that I can remember, unless we got some food while we was waiting to be sworn in. And so we came to Niles, and that's only about 20, 25 miles from Benton Harbor. And the man folks, it was early in the morning, the man folks came to work, and some was taking these hand carts and putting their tools on where they was going to go repair the railroad tracks or something. And they looked at us and smiled like, here's another bunch of dummies, which was the truth. But then Albert and Dan, they left us sit there at the railroad, and we were beside the railroad track. And then they went up a little tiny hill, and they found a hardware store, and that was open already. So Albert went in and he showed him the address. It was all hand language. And so the man nodded with his head, and he told with his head, with his hand, he made motion that we should stay there, and he was going to go get the car. And so Dan came back and said, come on, we're going to go by car. And so we went up this little hill, took our belongings, and he piled us into a Ford touring car. And this store man had the most beautiful dog I ever saw, black one, and he was staying in this store with us in our baggage, and he would not move. He just stand and looked at us, and the man went around in the back and got the car and loaded us in, and they took us to Benton, to St. Joe then. And when we came to St. Joseph, that to Glenlord, where Marvin Wallen had his shop there, and then the man drove up to my daddy's place, and when my daddy was home, but the stepmother was out working, she was working in a place, and he was home, and when he saw Albert come around and say, is this Mr. Kubrick's place? And daddy looked at him and he could have fainted. He was a big, strong, healthy man with a mustache, and he really was a handsome, good-looking guy. And then, all daddy said in German, but I'm not going to repeat it, but he thanked God that he kept his family home. And then the man said, daddy owed him $7 to bring us from Lansing, Michigan, down these 20 or 25 miles. And dad says, my land, that is just too much money. But he had enough, so he paid him. And he drove home, and then that evening, daddy let my stepmother know that we had come. She worked to Saturday to noon, but the man brought her home that Friday night. We came Friday morning, and the first meal daddy gave us was, had these great big cans of pork and beans, and he warmed pork and beans up. And then, of course, he gave each one a little tiny glass half full of whiskey. I don't know what kind of whiskey that was. He says, I saved this one for you when you come so you can have a toast with me together. And we ate bread and pork and beans, our first meal at daddy's house. And then we all took baths. Daddy had a nice place there, and almost a new house where now Marvin's plastic shop is, in the same house that we did it. And so we took all baths and washed and cleaned up, and then my sister Martha came in towards the evening. They had to make the first payment on their house, so they had a horse, Dan was his name. They came way out to Glenlord with the Dan, and he was so very afraid of cars, but in those days there weren't too many cars, and so they took Dan along, and he stayed with Martha the first time in America, the first night in America, and we stayed at daddy's house. And then Saturday was Lula Paschke's wedding. She was married to my cousin Alex. And then daddy said, you want to go to the wedding? And he had a team of horses, but how could we go to a church? We didn't even have nice clothes to do it. But then my brother, he hitched up the two horses that daddy had, and he put all of us on the wagon, and he took us for a ride around Glenlord there, and we stopped at one place and gathered up some nuts. So that was the first day in America. That was on a Saturday when we went for a ride. And now I'll see about my tape. And on Saturday we was home, and on Sunday daddy took courage and took us to the church. And Matka said to us, that's my stepmother, we used to call her Matka, and she said to us, children, when you get into the church, don't stand by the church and say a prayer like the Lutherans do. She says, here you don't do that, you go right to your seat and sit down. And he took us to the Church of God. I don't know why he didn't take us to the Lutheran church, because it was a beautiful, big Lutheran church, and a pastor's name was Nichterlein, but he thought that Martha was going there and the two aunts were going there, and so he probably thought that was supposed to be our church, I don't know. So we was in Sunday morning in this church, and then in the afternoon we drove home, and on Monday morning my stepmother went to work to her place, and she took me along because where she worked, for the man that she worked, he had a store, a clothing store, and most Jewish people, and this Jewish man had a daughter. She was married and had three children, and her husband worked for this Jewish, for the father-in-law in the store. And so they talked about me, and they said, yeah, we'll take her as a helper in the house. And so I was hired out for $3 a week, and I had to do the laundry by hand from the five people and myself, and then they brought some from the mother yet down there, and it was awful hard, and it was in fall of the year, and in September, and the leaves were falling off the trees, and they had so many trees there, and so when I didn't have enough to do in the house every morning, no, every afternoon, I had to, on my hands and knees, I had to scrub the kitchen floor. It was just a floor without varnish on or anything. Keep that clean. And then I had to rake leaves, big piles of leaves, and then the truck came and hauled it away. So I was really busy and kept down. And then my sister Tilly, she worked in the hospital. She was had left Bill, her husband, and Martha kept the three children. And so Tilly said, well, you can't work for $3 an hour. It's hard like this. And so she talked to the lady in the hospital, and there was an opening. One girl that worked about 7 years already in the laundry, she had a fallout with the cook. That cook was a bad woman. And so she quit. She said, either the cook will go or I will go. So they let her go, the laundry girl. And then they need a girl in the laundry, and Mary got the job. And then about, oh, maybe 4 weeks later, maybe 5 weeks later, then there was another opening, and then Philly got me in. And I was on the first floor cleaning the hall and cleaning the rooms and washing the dishes, and that was my job. And then when Philly had off that one evening, she went to see her children, and I had to do the dishes upstairs. Tilly worked upstairs where the operating room was, and where the real sick people were. Downstairs were more these cases that were not so sick. And we had good food, and I got $40 a month, and that's the job I should have kept, but loneliness got me away from there. Then Bill came, and oh, could he talk. He cried, and he prayed in front of Tilly. He was going to be a good boy. He wasn't going to hit her anymore. And he wasn't going to drink anymore, but that's talk in the wind. So she gave up her job and got her children, and they rented the house in St. Joe and moved and lived together again. But from there on, he did not keep his promise. If he'd have kept the promise, she'd have been with him today. But he did not keep his promise, so she met a man in the hospital with a broken leg, and he was a Russian man, and he was from Campbell, Ohio. So she met this man, and that's why she left and went with this man. And he didn't live too long, then he died, and she remarried. But I got in this hospital, and then all at once, some sheets were missing in the laundry. And so they all had the name on. And then this cook, she couldn't send those Russian girls. So that cook says, I know that Mary took him. I know, she says, she steals. So whenever, once a week, we'd all hop on the big streetcar and go out to see Martha in the children after the dishes were all washed. And so, and she says she takes him away when they go to visit her sister. She steals the sheets. So the office girl was German, so the lady called her in the office and talked to her through this German office girl, and Mary said, no, I don't steal. I have nothing stolen in my life. But anyways, they let her go and hired another girl, or they called this other girl back. They talked to her and talked to her and gave her a raise, so she came back. But she still could not get along with the cook. And then one day, this girl that came back and took Mary's place now, which was there before 8 years, I guess, she saw that this lady came into the laundry in the evening, late in the evening, and took some sheets and pillow slips, and she never brought any dirty sheets and pillow slips back. And so she reported, she says, I know that this German girl did not steal Mary, but she says, I think it is Mrs. Cook. Her name was Cook. And so the Mrs. Sky was her name, Mrs. Sky, and other people went down and they checked her trunk, and she had about 10 sheets in the trunk and pillow slips and everything. So she fired her and hired a new cook, but Mary couldn't get the job then because there was no opening. So she worked in the knitting factory at Cooper Wells, and she boarded with Tilly then. And I stayed there, I think, 5 months. In the last month, I worked the whole upstairs and downstairs, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't walk hardly. And at 10 o'clock, I was still washing dishes for every patient in there. And so I told her, I says, I can't. And then when my payday came, she said she was going to give me $60 a month for doing all the work, and she only gave me $50. So $10 extra I had to do that whole upstairs. And when a baby was born at night, I had to go and wash the baby room and wash the everything in there, what was in the dishes and everything. In the operating room, in operation was, I had to go and wash everything. Patient went away, checked out. Then I had to go in and help wash the beds and the dresser. And then the nurses put the new sheets on. And it was just absolutely too much work. But if I would have known what I know now, I start crying, and then she put her arm around me, the head lady, and she says, Tina, don't quit. She says, I'll give you your floor back. But I was too lonesome and too upset, so I regret it till this day, because I would have had a good life and lots of good food. And so I stayed there for about 5 months, and then I went and lived with my aunt Margaret and with Mary, and I worked at the Cooper Wells. I got a job then. And there I made only $10 or $11 a week, and I had to pay room and board, and had to stand all day. We started at 6:30 in the morning, and at 6 in the evening we quit in a half an hour for lunch. And summer 1923, that was my best year that I ever had in my life. We stayed just roomed with links. They had 5 children, but we had a bedroom and couldn't do much cooking, but we were used to eating the dry stuff. And I had my freedom. I could go where I wanted, worked, and then Saturday afternoon and Sunday, I could go where I wanted, and there was the Silver Beach, and it was always packed with people. And in the winter time at the Silver Beach, they had a dance. Every Friday night they had a dance. People would go pay 10 cents and then dance with their companion. So Mary and I, we couldn't talk a word of English, but we went down to this dance floor, and there they had popcorn and candies to sell and pop and all kinds of stuff. And there were women and children come there to watch those people dance. And so we spent our Friday nights there, and it was always popcorn and candy. We gave them the money, and they gave us the change back. We didn't have to say anything. And then in 1924, just around my birthday, it was before or after that, I met Daddy. And before I met Daddy, we was just in a group. There came my 2 boys, and Walter Schilling, that I grew up with, was 6 months younger than I, came to America with. And then we had some other girlfriends and boyfriends, and we would walk down to the beach in the summer and sit on the sand and watch the bowling going on and the dancing and how they do a merry-go-round, we rode that. And then Saturday evening, there was on that bluff there where the Whitcomb Hotel was, they had a band out there and lots of benches, and they were always filled with people just come and listen to the band. So a whole group of us would go out there and watch the band, and then some, like the boys, would always walk us home, and then they'd go back and take the streetcar, and they lived in Benton Harbor, Albert and Dan. And so we had a very nice summer. I wish oftentimes I could have relived that. It was just the best summer, the best year I've ever had in my life.